fleeting glimpses of things seen through a veil, darkly. Do we understand the meaning of these visions of life? Why we are here and how little of our existence we truly understand? Tonight we will talk of these things on The Other Side. Welcome to the program. I'm Jim Harold. So glad to be with you once again. And I have some fellow paranormal podcasters on the line, and we're going to talk about Strange Phenomenon. That is the podcast of Ray Tarara and RJ Blake. Now, they've been lifelong collaborators. Growing up in a small farming community, the two spent their youths searching for ghosts, monsters, aliens, and an escape from boredom. And they found that escape through their careers in filmmaking. Ray Tarara is a seasoned video production professional with a penchant for storytelling through the lens of post-production. And then RJ Blake is also a filmmaker with over a decade of experience in documentary, TV, scripted films, and commercials. And he's even worked for legendary executive producer Dick Wolf, if you know him or knew him from Law and Order, of course. And very cool. And I love the idea that they've brought their tenacity and passion for the supernatural into this culmination of their friendship and personal and professional careers. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Excited to be here.
What an intro. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, not a problem at all. Not a problem at all. So it sounds like you guys just were into weird stuff from like your childhood, the supernatural, the paranormal, all that stuff, right?
Yeah, from the very beginning. I think we met actually at an opera house in our hometown. We were doing a theater show there, and that opera house is actually famed for being incredibly haunted. So that
very
was
very haunted. Kind of,
very yeah. haunted. We even filmed a documentary there and spent a few nights there searching for ghosts. But that's how we met. And I think that connection right there kind of led through our obsession, I would say.
Now, there are people who are UFO people. There are people who are ghost people. There are people who are cryptid people. And then there's people who are like all of the above. And I think I'm all of the above. Where do you guys fall in? Because it looks like in the show Strange Phenomena, the podcast, you've covered a wide range of phenomena.
Yeah, I think the name, we chose that intentionally because every season we try to cover one of those topics that you listed. We try to do a ghost story. We try to do a cryptid story, UFO story. And then we usually look for another story that doesn't fit any of those categories that might be something totally different. So we like it all. No story is too strange for us. We kind of look into it all. And I think one of the criteria for us to take on a story is we need to have expert and eyewitness interviews that we can bring on to help tell the story. So it's not just narration. It's not just me reading back what's happened. We bring in people who've either been directly impacted or who have expert testimony to provide.
Now, when I'm looking here, this has always interested me, the question of ITC. You had, back in your first year there, first season, you had instrumental transcommunication, the dead speak. And I think people think that all just started with EVP detectors and with the Frank's box and all those things. But ITC goes back quite a ways. Why did you guys find that fascinating? And tell us a little bit about what you learned.
Yeah, ITC has been something that's always fascinated me. I think the idea that, you know, our digital devices can pick up some other world or communication that we're not aware of has always been just really interesting to me. And I came across a woman, Annabella Cardosa, who runs a website called ITC Journal. And she is an ex-diplomat, I believe, to Portugal. And she became fascinated by this phenomena and has pretty amazing recordings and a really amazing story as well. She lost her husband. She was looking for a way to kind of help maybe reconnect with him. And she fell into this world. And, you know, through talking with her and through the exploration, we went way back in history as well and found all sorts of interesting instances of people trying to communicate with the dead, including, I mean, I'm sure people are aware that Tesla and Edison had a bit of a competition to see who could build a ghost machine, essentially. Yeah. Tesla thought he had heard ghosts, and then Edison wanted to beat him on that. So
Yeah, Tesla in particular had built, you know, his spirit radio that in his journal, he writes down about the haunting voices that he heard come through that he felt he didn't have an explanation for. And we were able to even trace it going so far back to spiritualism. And I think that's something that we always like to do on the show, too, is not just the hard facts about the story, but going back and finding the cultural space in which it lives in and why others are connecting to the story. Particularly with ITC, there was a lot of loss and heartbreak, which is something that I feel everybody can connect to on some level. And that's been a universal of somebody trying to connect with that afterlife. It's one of our big questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love the idea of, you know, again, sometimes I think some of the paranormal TV shows are a little much with it, but I do love the idea of being able to train technology seriously on this idea and see if it's another way to kind of crack that nut and figure it out. And it amazes me that somebody as intelligent as an Edison, for example, was working on a telephone to the dead. And the interesting kind of corollary to that is the fact when he passed, I believe it had said that his last words were "It's very beautiful over there."
And, I didn't know that. That's, I love that.
Yeah,
it's great.
So that kind of makes you he definitely had an interest in the afterlife. Now, another topic you cover is that of cryptids. Now, I have to admit that if you talk about all the different anomalous phenomena that I've talked about over the years, sometimes the one that I'm maybe most skeptical of is Bigfoot, because I'm like, well, why haven't they found a body? And I know the justifications and I know the reasons. But then I look at something like the Patterson-Gimlin film from 1967 that's been stabilized. I'm like, ooh, that looks like muscle tone. So it kind of depends on what day you ask me. Now, you've had a couple of great guests. We've spoken to them in the past as well. You had Dr. Jeff Meldrum and Ron Moorhead, among others. What did you guys learn about Bigfoot and Sasquatch?
So Ron Moorhead definitely has, I think, and this is why I love doing the show, is talking to people who maybe have different ideas of things that maybe I don't look at the same way, but it's still fascinating to learn how other people view this phenomena. Because Ron Moorhead has definitely taken kind of a more spiritual approach, I think, with the Bigfoot. He started to tie quantum physics into his belief that these may be interdimensional creatures. And so he, on our show, we had him. And then we also had Jeff Meldrum, who's very much kind of, you know, in a very different camp of looking at these as flesh and blood. So for me, doing that episode, it was definitely kind of eye-opening, because I through our research, I came across a book called, which is a really great book, Where the Footprints End. And I hadn't really been introduced to the concept of Bigfoot, or the belief that Bigfoot may not be a flesh and blood creature like the way we know it. I had always thought of it as from the Jeff Meldrum camp of there's some unknown bipedal early hominid tromping through our woods. But really, there's a huge camp of people who believe that this is not necessarily the case, that this is something that is elusive because it doesn't necessarily exist in the same plane as us. So that was a new thing that we definitely learned, that I learned at least through the research, and just kind of realized how deep that belief goes. But Ron, you know, Ron's a great guy. You know, I listen to those tapes and I have it's hard to wrap your mind around it, because it's not a misidentified animal. That's nothing that exists in the woods. So, you know, you kind of get torn on this point of, you know, what happened out there? It's either an unknown animal or there's something else going on. And so I think in that episode, exploring that alongside the two different viewpoints of Jeff Meldrum and Ron Moorhead was super, super interesting.
You know, it's interesting. Yeah. Go ahead, RJ.
Yeah. And, you know, I think with cryptids in general, why haven't we found a body is very interesting. But in terms of specifically Bigfoot, you know, we did do an episode on the Oren Pendek, which was a cryptid that, to me, felt like more possible because of how thick the Indonesian forests are out there. And the idea that there could potentially be a bipedal small ape that is very difficult to see or find, I mean, that's something that I can really get behind. I mean, we actually grew up in Northern California, spending a lot of time in the countryside, in the mountains. And for instance, I've been up to Tahoe, I don't know how many times in my life. I saw a bear for the first time in person, in reality, at 33 years old. You know, it took me that long to see a real bear, like in person, in an area that's full of them. So the fact that's the idea that something like that may exist, and that organizations like National Geographic have actually sent people out to with camera trapping expeditions, I feel lends credibility where there's maybe some other cryptids out there that are very fun to place in a cultural setting. Something like the Snallygaster, which is a very well-known hoax. There's nothing about it that's not a hoax. But when you dig into the history behind the Snallygaster and how it's been used as kind of propaganda against racism, against actually prohibition propaganda, I think that that's an interesting place too with cryptid lore.
One thing that you did just recently put out an episode with the husband of the late great Linda Godfrey, and we had an opportunity to talk with Linda a few times, and certainly she's a researcher and a writer who is very much missed. But I applaud that that you're trying to carry on her name. What did you learn about Linda other than what we already knew? She was a great writer and a great researcher.
Yeah, that was an interesting episode because when we started researching, I think it's very much was a topical episode on the Beast of Bray Road. And kind of the more we started to dig into it, it was like, clearly this is the story of Linda. And Linda's reporting and her writing and her contributions to the paranormal community. I never had the chance to meet her, but I feel like through that episode became very like emotionally invested in it and her as well. So yeah, we interviewed her husband. We interviewed a number of her friends, her close friends. And just, I think the, you know, what I took away from it was, especially being a writer myself and a creative, was just kind of like the energy that she brought to her process and her dedication. You know, we got pointed out a number of times that she just had this giant library of books and every single book was notated. And I remember her husband saying that he found one book in her collection that wasn't notated, and kind of her response was like, well, there was nothing worth there for me to reference,
but nothing worth noting.
Exactly. But she could recall, and she would go back and she would review her library and she would look at those notes over time just to remember the key points that she found so fascinating. So she was able to recall all these amazing facts kind of off the top of her head and connect stories and connect lore in a way that I think is kind of, you know, you don't see that often. I mean, she really was just so well-versed and well-read, and such a good writer. I think when I first read her book, The Beast of Bray Road, I was caught kind of by her writing style, which allowed skeptics and believers to both enjoy the story. It's not something that necessarily says, hey, this is what happened and you should believe it. It's really very open and brings a bit of humor to it as well.
I think that's what caught me was her humor comes through, particularly when you listen to her interviews. There's a point where she joked about having werewolves in her basement, typing up her stories and all that. And, you know, being able to, I think that like these are really fun stories and this is a very fun topic to have, and taking it too seriously when we get to talk about a werewolf in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. I think that is maybe, you know, having that levity and the community that she was able to foster and build. I think that everybody should be hoping to be remembered as fondly as she was. And she was such a bright spot in so many people's lives and didn't seem like the kind of person who would ever talk down to another person. Mm-hmm. I think that her openness to listen to others' stories and to take them seriously, but also be able to have fun with them. I think it's like, what else do you want?
Yeah, it's a fine line, but I think it is important, like you said, because I mean, and sometimes I worry because when I do video, I have a video in it, the background and it has, you know, Frankenstein and, you know, we are not alone sign and things. And I think, oh, people won't take me seriously. But I think that it's balance. And I think particularly when you're dealing with these topics, you got to kind of have a little bit of a sense of humor, but also take it seriously. You know, yeah. I think most things in life, and I'll be honest with you, I think part of the problems we have in society are now because we can't laugh at ourselves and we can't, you know, even no matter how serious the topic is, you know, religion, relationships, politics, whatever it might be, we can't have a little bit of humor as much kind of aimed at ourselves as anybody else. I think we've lost some of that and I think we're the lesser for it. So I think having a sense of humor and but being serious when it's time to be serious, I think is a good thing. Now, I love what you guys do because I like to do a little bit of this myself, is delve into things that don't quite fit into a category. And I got to be honest, you had one here that I'd never heard about. And this is about this bridge in Scotland where dogs keep committing suicide. Now, we don't want to make light of suicide, dogs or humans, but what in the world is this all about? I've never heard of this.
Yeah, it's a really, really interesting story. There's this old bridge in Scotland called the Overton Bridge, and where there's a abnormal amount of dogs that jump off this bridge, and many times they die. But sometimes they survive. It is a long drop. So there's also ghost stories connected with this bridge. So those two together have created this, like this fear of this location. It's also made, I think the mythology around it was further, kind of amplified because, and this is a very tragic story, but a man actually ended up throwing his baby off of the bridge.
Oh my Lord.
Saying that he thought, I think that they were the Antichrist or something. So there's just been a lot of like, very strange and kind of upsetting things that happen around this bridge. That being said, in our episode, we bring on this man, Paul Owens, who is just an amazing character. He's pretty much devoted the past decade of his life to researching the history of this bridge. And he's definitely in the camp of thinking that there's something paranormal happening. But his book, which is called The Baron of Rainbow Bridge, is actually an amazing read because he's gone back through so many records for when the bridge was built and kind of compiled this narrative of this man. His name's Baron Overton. Mm-hmm. And he used to run a chemical factory and he basically amassed his wealth through this chemical factory where his workers, this is before any sort of like labor unions or any protection for workers, they're literally having their skin melted off of them from the fumes from the factory.
Oh my Lord.
They would have to build,
horrific.
It was really horrific. They'd have to build, shields, like metal shields around their stomach because if their shirt touched their skin, it was too painful. Their noses were being burned off. So he was and he was all in the name of making money, but at the same time, he also was a very strong religious man who tried to push himself as the most holy man in the area. So it was this kind of like dichotomy between, kind of his acts, what he was doing, and also kind of who he wanted to be as a person. But later in life, he became obsessed with building this bridge. This was like his goal. and the property owner next door wouldn't sell him the land to do it. Eventually, they passed away. He was able to build this bridge with this wealth he had accumulated through so many workers suffering. And because of that, Paul Owens believes that this bridge was essentially paid with blood money and that it may have created a thin place. And if anyone doesn't know, a thin place is basically a place where it's easier for spirits to come through and interact. Mm-hmm. And even before the bridge, there's all sorts of fairy folklore as well about mm-hmm. the area. So really good read. And a really interesting character, both Paul Owens and Baron Overton himself. And go ahead, Rob.
Yeah. But also as a major dog lover myself, I have two little dogs that I apologize if they ever break into this interview because they normally do. But most of our recordings get messed up by my dogs. But there is an interesting aspect of this story, too, that gets into dog behavior. Mm-hmm. Because essentially the undergrowth beneath the bridge has come up to where a dog may not be able to distinguish because they don't have the same rods and cones as us. Everybody kind of knows that, where they may not be able to actually distinguish that it is not a continuous road off the bridge. And there's a lot of mink is usually the scent that's contributed, attributed to why the dogs are chasing. They smell a mink, but there could be any number of critters down there. I mean, and I don't know if you've ever opened your door and your dog has just bolted out. Yeah. My dog just went after a squirrel the other day into the middle of the road. And I could 100% see where that's actually what's causing it, is that these dogs are getting a whiff of something. I would never let my, I don't let my dogs off leash, but there's plenty of people who let their dogs off a leash. That dog goes, it thinks it's chasing. I mean, it's tragic. That would break my heart if that happened to my dog. But being able to have both that scientific side and the fairy ghost side of that story was something that really attracted us to covering Overton Bridge. Because I think if it was just a place where this tragic, heartbreaking thing was happening over and over, I don't think that we would have actually just done that as an episode. Mm-hmm. But being able to delve into both sides made it very attractive to us.
Yeah. We had we also had Dr. David Sands on that episode, who is an animal behaviorologist. So he gives us kind of the other side of it as well and helps explain the behavior that RJ was talking about. And I mean, the problem became so serious that they actually had to erect a sign on the bridge warning dog owners to put their dogs on a leash because it was becoming such a common problem. Definitely a story worth looking into. Even Paul digs into some interesting accounts of people having premonitions about their dogs jumping off the bridge and them coming true. Premonitions in the nearby town about the man who threw his baby over the bridge. A woman actually had a dream about it the night before it happened. So just some really strange stuff going on over there.
Well, you want to talk about someplace with strange stuff. You've done a number of episodes on Skinwalker Ranch, including an interview with the man who broke the original story. Can you talk about that? Because I can't think of any place weirder than Skinwalker Ranch.
I love that story because there is no boundaries to Skinwalker Ranch. Everything you can imagine, it seems like, has happened at that property. And, you know, there's a lot of people who've been interviewed about that topic. And actually, one person I felt like whose voice was missing was the original reporter, Zach Van Eyck. I hadn't seen him speak out much about the initial reporting he had done. So reached out to him, was able to talk with him. He's a filmmaker now, but had a background as a reporter, was working at the Deseret News, and they were doing a topical piece on the release of the movie Independence Day at the time. Mm-hmm. So his boss wanted him to cover UFO reports in the Uinta Basin. So he went to a local UFO expert. I believe his name's Hicks, Joe Hicks. No, not Joe Hicks.
Junior Hicks.
Thank you. Yeah. Junior Hicks, who's written a kind of the definitive book on UFO sightings in the Uinta Basin, because there have been so many. And he got some information from him, but before he left, he asked him like, well, do you know if there's any more recent encounters happening? Anything that you've heard about, you know, that's not in the past. And he kind of hesitated and then tells Zach like, well, maybe you should call Gwen, who's down at the bank. She's been having some encounters on her property. So he calls Gwen Sherman, and she starts to tell him about all these encounters that have been happening that are just unbelievable. You know, flying crafts on their property, unidentified wildlife, shadows in their home, lights floating through their house, things that just like
giant wolves that shouldn't be in the area, like a lot of wolves,
yeah,
cattle mutilations.
just like everything. I mean, it just seemed like there was no end to it. And, you know, she had to kind of convince Terry Sherman, her husband, to agree to do it because he didn't really want to speak to the media. But after Zach's reporting, that kind of blew it up into the story we know today because it got a lot of other people interested. Terry and Gwen Sherman ended up being interviewed by Linda Moulton Howe on Art Bell, Dreamlands at the time, mm-hmm. which caught the attention of Robert Bigelow, who is, you know, I think a lot of us probably know his name associated
sure.
With, you know, his interest in the paranormal and UFO research. And he's even received some government funding to study UFOs.
And some of that government funding may have gone into the work at Skinwalker. I mean, speaking with Zach, just hearing his initial reactions mm-hmm. to what was going on there, you know, Skinwalker has become so legendary, partly because I think it's also so still shrouded in mystery, even with the television show that they have. The Shermans have very rarely spoken in public about this. And to be able to speak to people who were able to interact with them and not just interact with them, but see them on their property while they had it was interesting. You get the details of, you know, when the Shermans first moved in, that they were discovering the locks that were inside the house to keep something out, like almost like panic rooms built throughout the house that Zach was able to actually see and interact with at the time, which was just incredible to hear that when there's been, on one hand, it feels like there's a lot of stories that have come out. But on the other hand, I feel like there's a lot of stuff. It's a lot of stories, and we haven't been able to get inside very often.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with that Skinwalker Ranch story when we were producing that. That was, I mean, I'd say maybe a little bit frustrating. It's just trying to get the firsthand accounts from people during the period where I think the accounts that we're all familiar with take place with the Shermans. It's very hard to find firsthand accounts. It all seems to, you know... and I think partly that's because the Shermans signed a non-disclosure agreement with Robert Bigelow when they sold the ranch. So they haven't spoken to the press since that happened. So some of the best people we have to speak to are people like Zach, who was able to work with them and interview them early on before they were signed on the NDA. And then also Linda Moulton Howe, who we spoke to as well, who conducted the interview with Terry and Gwen Sherman. But yeah, super, super fascinating stuff. And then we also spoke to... Thomas Winterton, who's on the Skinwalker show now. Mm-hmm. So kind of bringing in the modern perspective as well. The show mostly focuses on the Sherman period of time rather than the modern research that's happening now on the show. But we do touch on that a little bit as well.
Yeah. The thing is to me is that, I talked to Colm Kelleher about it, for example, and this whole idea of the hitchhiker effect mm-hmm. that really is when you talk about Linda Moulton Howe, kind of that phrase she always is so fond of using, high strangeness. Yeah. Skinwalker Ranch is the epitome yeah. of high strangeness. And so is Strange Phenomenon, the podcast. Gentlemen, it's been a lot of fun. I mean, we could go through every episode, but you've done a lot and you're doing a lot and you're doing great stuff. So really the important thing at this point is to tell people, where can we find the podcast Strange Phenomenon?
Yeah, you can go to our website at www.strange-phenomenon.com. And you can also find us on all major podcast platforms. The show name being Strange Phenomenon.
Yeah, just search it. Way. It's there. Yeah. It's on Spotify. It's on Apple. It's on everywhere.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, and a quick note about the format, just real quick, is basically we do a full documentary episode, and then we release all the full interviews 2 weeks following that. We trickle them out. So you can listen to the full documentary episode and then dig deep into each of the individual interviews we did as well.
Very
so,
cool.
Yeah, we definitely recommend starting with the documentary episode, but... we always want to make sure that all of our guests feel as if their full point of view is represented. And that's why we release the full interviews afterwards.
That's a great idea. Now, here is one question, and I'll pose it to you both. And if you both could please answer, what have you learned I mean, if you had to come and walk away with one thing that you've learned in the time you've been doing this, maybe something you didn't expect.
RJ, do you have one?
Yes. I think that when we started this, we approached this from a fairly skeptical angle. I think that we both are more in the I want to believe camp than fully believers. As we dig in and go through the stories, I think that there's a lot that can't be fully explained. There are things out there right now that we do not have explanations for. And I think how that touches people's lives and how it affects them, there are people who refuse to accept that. And there are people who feel like they can only deal with facts. And unfortunately, in this world, in this reality that we live in at the moment, not everything does have a full explanation that we can give. And I think that's been kind of the main takeaway for me as we go through.
Ray, what's your takeaway?
Yeah, I think for me, it's kind of a lot of these stories, it stops being important to me, whether it's true or not. And I think it starts to become more interesting to me about the people who are part of the story and their stories and how they came to be a part of this and what are their beliefs and why do they believe in what they believe. And, you know, I respect everyone's beliefs, and even if it's different than my own. And it's just fascinating to learn from them and learn just kind of more about kind of human beliefs, because there's so much out there, and there's so much out there we don't know. And I think it's always really important to explore and be open-minded to every single one of those topics, because who knows where it'll lead you.
Well, Ray Tarara and RJ Blake, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about your podcast, Strange Phenomenon. I hope everybody checks it out. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Dan.
And thank you for tuning into the program. I appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.